Welcome to Intel on AI, a podcast series that brings you the latest on cutting-edge tech driving artificial intelligence in the enterprise today. And now your host, Emily Hudson.
Hello and welcome. My name is Emily Hudson, and this is another edition of the Intel on AI podcast. Today, I'm talking to Adrian Sosna, who's the Chief Marketing Officer of Hackerus. Good morning, Adrian. Welcome.
Thank you for having me. It's great to be here. I'm very excited to be able to speak to you today about the work we're doing at Hackerus and a little bit about what we've been working on with the Intel AI Builders program. So thank you and good morning.
Good morning. Well, I should point out to our listeners, Adrian is kind enough to call us all the way from Japan. So it's the middle of the night for him, but he is amazingly awake. So my first question for you is Hackerus. What does the name mean?
Hackerus is from Hakaru, which is Japanese and means to measure or to scale something. And that's really the origin and the background of what we're doing. We're all about understanding what's going on, categorizing, measuring, and qualifying data. So it really comes from Japanese language. And that's the background right there.
That's so interesting. I would not have expected that. So tell me about the solutions that Hackerus has developed, how they're being used today.
So at Hackerus, we're really specializing in making sense of difficult situations where you want to scale expert human knowledge using machine learning techniques. So we don't necessarily go after the general applications. We go after fairly specific things like you're looking for a type of defect on a PCB board, which really can only be detected by an expert instructor, or you're looking to understand what's going on in an X-ray image from someone who just had a brain stroke. We're doing this kind of things where you really need the human expertise to be amplified or digitized, and that's the problems that we go after.
You know, it's interesting. I think maybe a bit of the public's perception of AI is that it's coming for all of our jobs, when in fact, a lot of the solutions we talk about here are really about amplifying and extending human knowledge, where, as you said, there's not enough experts to interpret an X-ray or find a fault in a manufacturing facility. So AI solutions are really, really useful to extend that knowledge. Now, one thing I noticed about Hackerus is that you use a technique called sparse modeling, and it's not something I'm that familiar with. Could you explain that a little bit more?
Well, at its core, what we're doing with sparse modeling is taking an approach that understands the data the same way that a human does. Meaning, when you meet your colleagues in the morning in a pre-COVID-19 world, when you meet your family in the morning in this world, you're going to recognize them by some key features. This could be their hair or their eyes or their smile. You don't need to scan every single input. So what I'm trying to say is there are some key features that are determining a outcome. With sparse modeling, what we do is we build models that first identify the key features, and then when presented with new data, only look for these key features. This means that you have a technique that's far more resource energy efficient. And it really hasn't been used too much in the business world yet. It's been largely used for a research and academic purpose. So, for instance, a few years back, you may have seen a story about the first image ever of a black hole. Now, that image was created using sparse modeling technique. And really what we're doing at Hackerus is pioneering sparse modeling's use in this broader context of going after general problems. We do work with academia quite well. Here in Japan, we're working with both Kyoto, Tohoku, and Shige University, where we have academic advisors who really help us in this work.
You know, I like your analogy about greeting your family in the morning, because you're absolutely right. That's something that the human brain does. You know, we don't have all the data, but we are able to extrapolate and instantly process it, right? And it sounds like that's really what sparse modeling is doing as well. It can come up with explainability even if the data set is not complete. And that data set is not always complete when you're addressing problems in AI, right?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And you do get to one of the key value propositions of the solutions that we're developing at Hackerus. And that's really is about explainability, providing a clear explanation that's human understandable for why our models have suggested something. And really, if you want to kind of peel into the onion a little bit more, what it means is when we see a occurrence that's been identified as, let's say, a defect, what we can go back and point to is these are the characteristics of this type of defect. And we classify this as a defect because there's a match. And we can say how great that match is between what has been defined before as a defect and this new occurrence. And really, that explainability feature is something I think is getting more and more attention, because if you just have a prediction that tells you the result, that's all well and good, but it doesn't allow you to make any improvements or take a step back and say, okay, so why is this a defect? Right? So that's one of the key benefits of what we're doing. And we're really able to achieve this due to the sparse modeling technology.
No, I think that's a very good point. And you know, you also tying back into your black hole analogy, I think as humans, we like the explainability. We don't want decisions made in a black hole. We want to know how things came to the conclusion they did. And so I think that's really valuable, and it's really becoming more and more discussed in the world of AI. Mm-hmm. So thank you for calling that out. So let's talk practical elements. How does this work? Is it running in a data center? Is it an algorithm that's remotely based? How is your Spectro solution, your visual inspection module, being implemented?
So with sparse modeling, we're basically capable to work with two types of data. So we work with things that are image-based. So these are images, x-rays, videos, but we also work with time series data. In terms of its practical implementation, what we do is we start off with, and this is where the human in the loop aspect is critical. We start up with a high quality set of annotated data by the expert operator or the expert doctor, where it's clearly indicated what is a defect or what is a condition and why has it been flagged. That's kind of how we start. Now, how that's actually done is probably the topic for someone who's far more clever than a marketing individual. But what you end up with when you work with image data is you end up with a dictionary of features. And what we want to do is we want to reduce that dictionary of features to as few as possible. This is what we call dictionary learning.
Okay.
And basically what happens is when you get a new piece of data and it's presented to this model, we compare it to these features that are defined inside of the dictionary. So really what we're doing is we're classifying things based on their match with the dictionary. In terms of how you can interact with Spectro, Spectro can be deployed on the factory floor in a PC that's actually out and deployed over there. We do work with these box PC manufacturers in that regards, but it's also available as a cloud module where you can directly tap into the power of Spectro no matter where you are, just using any standard browser. And that's really where we've been doing a lot of work with the Intel AI Builders program in optimizing Spectro's cloud capabilities.
Yes, I think one of the real benefits of that program, which a lot of people don't know about, are access to all of the optimizations for various tools and frameworks, such as TensorFlow, Python, to make them run faster on existing Intel Xeon hardware, which a lot of folks already have in their data center. So can you talk a little bit about how you were able to maybe implement those algorithms and optimize using the Intel tools?
Yeah, so I mean, that's been a great collaboration for us. And as I mentioned previously, Spectro goes out and it is actually run on the actual location where we want to detect things, if that's a factory floor for semiconductor components or if it's an automotive tier one. But before you get to a point where you want to actually deploy in a factory environment, typically you want to do testing, you want to do preparations, you want to make sure that this is working. And for that, the cloud module of Spectro really is the best way to get started. And in our work together with the AI Builders program, we've had the luck to work with some excellent engineers over at the AI Builders program that have been very helpful to have us do basically really good parameter fine tuning and using Intel optimized Python. I think that's really what it's been all about. It's been about taking these applications and taking these tests and running them over an Intel optimized environment. And what we've been able to get there is situations where things are up to 40% faster just by deploying it in this environment using these parameter fine tunings. So that's been very powerful for us in able to kind of deliver a better customer experience.
That's amazing. Now, you mentioned at the beginning of our talk a little bit about the applications for Spectro in terms of machine defects or in terms of medical applications. And as we all know, medical applications are really front and center in a lot of conversations these days. Have you looked into using the Spectro solution for any sort of COVID-related initiatives?
So what we're doing with Spectro is we're seeing that there's a tremendous opportunity to bring visual inspections further and take them out of the traditional kind of machine vision, checking things if they're broken or not, and using them for more applications. In fact, here in Japan, in Kobe, which is the largest life science hub in Japan, we set up an office and we have access to a wet lab and all the things that come with it. And what we're doing there is actually taking Spectro into the domain of life sciences. And really what this is all about is creating the baseline to understand and pursue this type of issues that we're facing now. So we're not directly pursuing things that are related to the current pandemic, but what we're looking at is how do we prevent this from happening again, or how do we build tools that allow us to stay ahead? And that's really where we're taking Spectro right now.
That's fascinating. And one thought that just occurred to me, you know, I think our world is going to look very different in the next few years, especially in terms of social distancing or distancing at the workplace. And it occurred to me that visual inspection remotely could be more and more valuable than ever as we're trying to keep our workers safe, but yet also make sure our machines and our production still is up and running.
I think what we have in Japan is we have a relatively isolated problem that's going to be felt across the developed world in the coming years. But we're a little bit ahead of the curve. And that problem is related to an aging population. So we're seeing many factories and medical institutions where the experts are just getting old and they need to retire, or they're unable to continue their practice, but there's no apprentices to take over. So in those situations, it actually predates the remote work situation where we just need to find this type of solutions to remain as effective and remain as productive. But as you say, even more so if you add the layer of people needing to keep a certain degree of distance from each other, you're going to have both of these situations happening at the same time. And when that's happening, utilizing this type of smart machine vision solutions is just going to be fundamental. I mean, our basic stance has always been this: AI solutions are another tool in the toolbox that help human operators be better. They're not replacing any humans. What they're rather doing is they're helping us to get better performance, better output. And that's really what we're talking about here. If you have to do this kind of inspections remotely, what could be better than having some really cool machine vision technology to help you along the way?
So anything else you'd like to add for our listeners about the future of HackRIS?
So we just announced our Series B closure, and we are gearing ahead with that additional support coming from the mostly industrial sector. So Osaka Gas, a large energy provider here in Japan, has come in as our lead investor. And what I'm expecting is that you'll see more of HackRIS in the future, not only here in Japan, but far beyond. We're targeting both the North American and European markets to really bring this type of solutions to a broader audience.
Excellent. Now, for listeners who would like to learn more about your company, where can they go for more information?
Well, the best place would be hackRIS.com. And if you're ever interested, do always feel free to reach out to me. I always answer all the messages I get.
And apparently at whatever time of day it is, you'll be available.
I'm always available.
Yes, Adrian, it was so nice to talk to you today. Thank you again. It's been a real pleasure. This has been Emily Hudson, and you're listening to Intel on AI.